If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
This is an outstanding opportunity for you to let the audience know how nerdy the DNA of the show is.
That's
sometimes
true.
It's hidden away or disguised.
Well, that's a good, I'm going to use that as an intro right now. We're here with Brian Michael Bendis, and also joining us at the podcast today is Mike Shoemaker, the producer of Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Hello.
And as Brian was just saying, I think Mike being here, per your request, is to really reveal to our audience exactly how thick the nerd DNA is in this show.
Yes, Seth and I are friends based on nerdiness.
Yes.
And it's actually the question that gets most asked of us once we've been on the show. They're like, wait, like once you've had a couple of us on, they're like, wait a second. They know their stuff, right?
There's
so,
a reason.
Yeah. So, and then when we were talking just about Legion, like, I don't think your audience knows that both of you have written comics, like professionally.
Yes.
So
professionally...
Well,
right.
I mean, they were published in a professional setting.
Shoemaker was at SNL when I started, and one of the first things we did together was walk down to Midtown Comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a very kind service that people provide to new people in town, is to show them where the comic book shop is. And you and I met doing a panel
with
Ed Brubaker and Bill Hader.
Yeah.
And that really started the ball rolling for Bill Hader and I to write a Spider book.
Yeah.
A Spider Man.
Yeah, that was fun to watch too. You could see the pull.
Yes.
Yeah, the pull was very cool. Yeah. And you worked with Kevin Maguire, who's a friend of both of ours, right?
Yep.
So you got A-list right away.
I got A-list right away.
That was pretty awesome.
And Kevin Maguire is still the artist. He drew my Twitter avatar, which I'm really starting to think about changing.
Wow. What happened?
I don't know. I feel like it doesn't look real because nobody else uses just like a cartoon of themselves.
Right. Seth also had him draw the two of us together, and I tried using that as mine, but people had too many questions. It's great. It's hanging up in my office. It's framed.
Awesome. This is, by the way, Kevin Maguire made the worst mistake in the world of basically letting me know he would draw things for me. He also, at my wedding, he drew a picture of my wife and I and our dog as superheroes that we put on the wedding bags, the wedding gift bags.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Well, he lives in town with us. We actually feed him often. So
that's Portland, right?
Yeah, yep, where everyone lives.
Yeah, when did the comic book community move to Portland and why?
They seem to have been there. Like, I moved in 2001, and Greg Rucka and Matt Wagner, and there was a ton of people already there.
Yeah.
And then every time someone comes to visit us, like, everyone, just to, you know, visit, they go, oh!
Yeah.
And they move. And it feels to people who haven't come visit us that some cult thing is going on. Like,
right.
The people come, and then there's quiet, and then they move there. So, Matt and Kelly moved here. Almost everyone you can mention ends up living in Portland. It's kind of crazy.
And
we have and Elisa hosts huge dinner parties for everyone just to come over on Friday nights and just whine and complain about their awesome jobs.
It's great because I, you know, and obviously some of the you know, show business has moved there as well. And mm-hmm. I think it started with Portlandia, and then because of those crews.
Yeah, Fred's like a sainthood in Portland. Yeah. That's not a joke. So, yeah.
And, I mean, I went up there a few times because Portlandia was there, and I couldn't see why, if you had a job like being a comic book writer that you could do anywhere, that you would think, oh, this is foolish to be anywhere else.
Also, there's something about the city that kind of, like, you realize everyone's working on their creativity, so you should go home and work. Like, everyone's kind of hustling and working, so it kind of inspires you to do better.
That's
nice
to hear.
It is. It's very
nice. Some of your crew from... Doc Now, didn't you have
to shoot
use
documentary Now there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's actually a great place to shoot. And also, Fred made the most of it. Portlandia like turned some people into veteran TV people. It's kind of he gave a lot of people break. People are friends of mine like who did not have experience and ended up being really great at it. So.
And a lot of them who then justifiably so were nominated for Emmys for hair and costume and wardrobe, and that was a show that you really couldn't have less than exceptional people work on because of how many things that
we lost two nannies to Portlandia.
Did you really?
Yeah, we did. Right, went to the makeup department. We were like,
did they both go to the makeup department?
One went to the makeup department. So we should come. Yeah, and then we were like, oh, we're losing nannies.
Did they come back? Or that like
no? It was
now
friendly.
They're makeup.
No, we get
people.
It. They go, you want to hang out with Seinfeld or watch me stare at a wall? I get it. I totally get it.
So
and also you. So then you wrote Legion, right?
But let me say, like Jeff Johns said, hey, do you want to write a couple of Legion stories with me? Because we had become friends, and he said, what's your favorite thing? I said, that. And he said, whoa, I got that book just now. So we're going to do backup stories in adventure. And he said, we could do a long run of it. And we did three, and it was great. I mean, he did everything. And then I would like give him some dialogue, and he would explain to me how it worked. But I got to go to D.C. and do it in the offices. And then we did like via mail. And then we were like talking about the fourth one. And then I guess Levitt said, oh, I'm going to come back. And he said, well, we lost the book. And, I mean, that was it's great news for Legion fans.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just like, all right, fine. I mean, actually, this is good. So I couldn't complain. But that's how it ended. We would have done, like a dozen maybe.
Yeah.
I am very aware, for those who are still listening, that they could only possibly be comic book fans. So I am now going to move into comic book questions. This is really, this is big news in the comic book industry that you moved over from Marvel to DC this year to work exclusively with DC after 19 years, right?
Yeah.
So when you went over to Marvel, did you still have your toe in with Image or did you?
Yeah, I was doing creator-owned stuff the whole time. And then when you move over to, when I move over to Marvel, they don't do creator-owned. So I was still split. And then Image wasn't a good fit anymore. And then Marvel said, you can do your creator-owned stuff here too. And that was really nice. And they had never done that before. So when I moved, now it's a whole unit that moves. Now it's all the creator-owned and DC offered us a home for all of it. The real partnership,
That's really exciting.
Partnership. So
now, obviously, as we've established, you live in Portland. Mm-hmm. You can do Marvel Comics and DC Comics just as easily there. Has your life changed at all as far as the day-to-day moving from Marvel to DC?
The sitting at night and trying to figure out how to make the people do the thing is still the same, but everything that DC does to make comics and everything Marvel does, like the sausage, is completely made differently. And that's fascinating. It's like you worked at McDonald's and they make one way, and they were Burger King, and no, we do the buns first, and they're like, really? And I am just such a craft nerd that I'm just, ooh, this is so exciting. And even the editors have different names, like different labels for everything, so it was.
You would think with the cross pollination, it would have like evened out.
No, Warner Brothers has its own machine, and now Marvel is a Disney part of the Disney machine. There's just two giant machines that just run differently, and Marvel has always had this like even with the corporate overlords, Marvel's always had this kind of rock and roll punk. Like we just thought of this yesterday, and here it is, right? And DC has more of a like a stately kind of button up, but take it seriously and make real art out of it kind of tone, like almost like a more, I want to say more adult. It sounds ridiculous. Like we're more adult Batman makers. But there's a little bit more, always back even in the 60s, a little more sophisticated way they ran their office. So I think just for me personally, just I got to an age where, I kind of like the more corporate-y, organized.
When people ask me all the time, do you miss SNL? My answer is always, I miss being that young. Like, I would it would be jarring to be doing it at this age. So I understand that thing of, like, you get a little bit older and you're like, oh, a nightly talk show. This is a little bit more refined.
Right. I wonder if it felt the same to you, because, like, I didn't leave Marvel angry, or, like, it was just time, like, mountain climbed and maybe leave before they kick you off. That happens, right? So, like, so it was that to this new thing that it was equally nerve-wracking and exciting and oh, boy, I hope people want me to do that.
How? I mean, obviously, you're a huge fan of DC Comics. I assume that even when you're working at Marvel, you were reading DC Comics.
Well, you know, we're the same age. Remember, like, a lot, it's in my DNA. Like, all my favorite creators jumped ship to DC at one point. Like, there was, like, John Byrne and Frank Miller and George Perez. I'm going deep for the late night podcast. They all kind of jumped ship when I was in high school, and it was really crazy and exciting, and they made really big, artful books out of big, giant characters. So when the opportunity comes and go, yeah, you want to do that thing all your heroes did? You're like, well, I think I do, right? But it's terrifying. It is.
How much of the stress comes from just, you know, you're starting to write these characters that have these backstories, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously you have to be really careful with the details of the back. And how much did you come in knowing, and how much do you have to educate yourself on when you take on a new character?
Interesting. This part was interesting. I've been reading this stuff my whole life. Like, I you know, you think, like, Legion's in your DNA. I got it, right? But then when you come back to it as a co-author, as a, now I'm adding to the story, that's a whole different part of your brain.
Like, it wasn't in your head. Because I think I'm a completist, but I thought I had an encyclopedic knowledge, and I bet I don't. I bet you thought the same thing.
Yeah, no, that's it. And particularly Legion is just like, it's like a Robert Altman film in every panel, like, of superheroes. It's like 34 lead characters. They all have a home planet and a power and a subtext. And
three versions of them.
Yes. And all, they have their name and their real name. Yeah. And their, it's my brain is mush. It's really killing me. It's too much.
Do you think there's a different kind of artist that jumps into the idea of that 34 different characters?
This is Ryan Sook.
Who's amazing.
One of my favorite artists of all time. And when I came to DC, I said, oh, Ryan, because he was just, I didn't know him, but I just can look at his line weight and you think, I bet we'd make really good comics together. I bet we're the same person, kind of thing. And I, this time I was right. And we did like two issues of Action together. And I basically said, will you do Legion with me? Which is kind of like asking someone to marry you, like, Layla, because this is not a small undertaking. This is the biggest undertaking. Would you do this with me? And it's like, would you like to have 40 babies with me? And he was all in. And DC gave us a whole year to prep, which in comics, like movies or TV, is almost impossible, almost unheard of. I didn't even realize it till it was over. Well, what a gift that was. We got to build everything.
And they let you keep it secret. I mean, you managed to keep it secret, I should say.
Hardly, because I was so excited, because I was literally the writer of Legion of Superheroes when I walked in the door but we had to build for a year to get there, but I was like hinting to anybody who would tell you, I'm like, because
you got crazy hinting near the end.
I wanted,
but early on, I didn't feel the hint, so I think you got away with it.
All right, cool. It was one of these things that was on the table when I came to DC, and you were like, that's the scariest thing on the table. We're going to have to do that.
And how long has it been since there's been a series?
10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so the fans went from, it was great, they went from literally begging me on Twitter, like, in the nicest, kindest, non-way, like, please do this, and as soon as we show them the costume designs, not that! Yeah, so it's my favorite.
Again, you're sort of this free agent signing for DC, like, they value your skills. When you showed up, did they sort of lay stuff out on the table and say, this is what is here for the taking?
Yeah, I really didn't know anybody over there. Like, we hadn't even, like, had a lunch. Like, I knew Jim Lee for a long time.
Right.
We came up together. And Jim had actually called years ago and said, me, you, Legion of Superheroes. And I couldn't legally come, and I wasn't ready mentally. But I went, oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to stick. And it did. And he knew it was. And it was a good little seed he planted, because years later, they knew. They had almost got me with that. But yeah, I sat with Dan DiDio, who runs the joint, and we had coffee and got to know each other. And he brought up the idea of doing like an imprint, the Wonder Comics imprint we do Young Justice with. And
which is great, by the way. I it's not really for young people, because I'm 61 and I really enjoy it.
It's like Pixar. It's supposed to be for all people, but it's supposed to be very inviting. But that wasn't an idea that we had in our head. And Elisa publishes that line with us. And we thought, you know, finding a home for a creator own was going to be the biggest thing. And Dan sat down and goes, listen, I don't know what your plans are, but we'd like to be your home for your creator own stuff. And we'd like you to dedicate more of your life to it. And I'm like, oh, this is going to work out great. So that was the opening thing. And then he started talking to me about the Black Label line that they were just starting and the Walmart line that they were just starting. It was a lot of reader outreach programs that I was very excited about. Getting
Can you explain
kids.
The Walmart line? Because I don't get it. I don't understand. And I don't – there's not even a Walmart in New York. I don't know.
Well, Walmart is a store that sells a lot of – but they have it was just an opportunity to create a brand new kind of comic book project. And this one was like three or four comics, but in the front was – you know, brand new story by me doing Batman and Tom King doing Superman. So it'd be like, oh, we're switching characters, but you can only get them at Walmart. So fans go to Walmart and kind of support the endeavor. And then new readers who never see this stuff, oh, here it is in Action Alley right next to your Pokemon card. So,
and when can other people
get it? You remember like 7-Eleven
it?
When we were kids?
Yes,
and it's
well,
just
when
like
can
that.
Other people get it? Is that
now,
happened?
It's out now. It's called now. Batman Universe, me and Nick Darrington, and it's gorgeous.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But I remember, I mean, that was how I got into comics, was just like a spinner at a grocery store.
Yeah, yeah. I literally remember reading Avengers Annual 10 by Michael Golden, standing there in an aisle having like a life-changing art experience, like, you know, just, yeah, so yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned you had a year to work on Legion, but of course you are, I don't want people to think that you were just drilling down on Legion for a year, because you, how many things are you working on?
Yeah, I had like 18 other projects came out doing that, but it was cool though, while I was putting out Superman and Action Comics and Batman and Young Justice, that we were able to slowly percolate Legion like it needs to, right? I think that's what I'm referring to, is that how much world building needs to happen for it to really be that thing we want it to be, because what Legion is like the most advanced, coolest version of the superhero genre, right? So for this audience, who's now seen everything, right? Avengers Endgame, like you think you've seen it all, well, you haven't. And so we gotta really show that, though, right? So
you were saying four kids,
yes.
6 to 16.
Yes.
What is their take on comic books?
And my 16-year-old is a documentarian.
Really?
And she is training and documentary now. Gets her watching that and then goes find the original.
That's our whole goal with documentary now, is to get people to go back and watch the old ones. Yes.
So it's been very, very cool with that. I thought you'd like to hear that.
Good.
Cool. So.
And do they like comics? Did you bounce things off them?
Well, yeah, I don't like gather around and listen to Daddy talk about Daddy. I don't do that, but it's everywhere. It's all over the place. They know about it. And the stuff there's stuff like Jessica Jones where they know it's Daddy's and they know it's some creepy thing on Netflix, you know, to them, right? And, but with this stuff, and now that they're a little older, it's a little easier to engage with them. Or they come to me and they go, talk to me about this. What is this one? Or something is interesting to them, then I get into it. My son is great. He's 6 years old, so everything is cool and amazing. And, because so much of this happened before he was born, like, I went to see Avengers Endgame for a fraction. We took the sons. We're sitting there, and he, like, crawled up in my lap halfway through. It gets a little scary, right? And I, like, talk him through it a little bit. And then we got to Hawkeye is Ronin, so that's one of mine, right? And I go, oh, yeah, hey, this is one of Daddy, before you were born, Daddy gave Hawkeye these swords. And now my son's not allowed to have swords, so he was very angry that Hawkeye got what he said. He turns to me and goes, Hawkeye gets murder swords. And it was just mad for the rest of the movie. So
he's got a good point.
Yeah, he was right. And then on my girls, like, I have a book called Naomi, and it's about adoption. And I have daughters that are adopted, but it's not about them. They know their story and this isn't it. But I included them in it because I didn't want them to be like confused. Like, what's going on? Is this me or is this about me? And I'm like, so we talked them all the way through, and they were very helpful in building it. And
I want to say it's such a great book. And the way it came out, I mean, I read it each week. I didn't like wait.
Thanks.
And the thing that I was realizing later, because it's a new character in her own book, not based on other superheroes. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think, like, since the Silver Age, there's only like a handful of actual new characters that aren't like another Batman or like Superman's cousin or. And I could only think of
It's a little surprising.
Of like Firestorm or like the Swamp Thing. There's like think of more. There really aren't that actually debuted in their own book that wasn't part of a team that worked. And this already worked. You're going to be on the second series.
Yeah, no, we're greenlit. Yeah,
it's a really an accomplishment.
Thank you. It's always the scariest. You know, it is like I said. It's like you birth a child in the world, and you're like. do you like me? Yeah, yeah. Oh, you don't? Okay. Yeah, it's so this one, when I came in, I didn't realize it wasn't just that the character was not like a legacy character, as they say, but also a fresh perspective. That was the thing I kind of fell into by accident. Me and David were like, she's looking at the DC Universe from a different perspective than everyone else, and that was inviting. And that one I was an accident to me, but I'm happy to run with it now that we know what we have. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
you mentioned David Mack. Yes,
yes.
And you guys also had a book called Cover. A book called Cover. Mm-hmm. And again, this is another one you came up with on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that one.
So Cover is about comic book creators that end up being inducted into the CIA, being brought in, and it's based on some truthfulness. Obviously, it's a fictional story, but I was asked to speak at Langley a couple years ago, and that process, have you ever been there?
No,
because sometimes a lot of writers get to go there, but it's quite a security clearance and a whole thing to go in there. It's like five airports to go through. There's snipers in the woods as you drive up. It's that intense. And so I went through that whole thing with Langley and got to meet everybody and went through the whole process. And then we went to and did some stuff for the State Department. They asked us, they go, hey, there are some countries that we don't have a great relationship with, but culturally we do, like Bolivia. Would you like to go to Bolivia where the governments don't like each other, but they love American superheroes? They would love to have you there. And I was like, yeah, I mean, like, that's an offer. You go, Bolivia, I think I have to go to Bolivia.
Yeah.
And then we went, and it's the highest elevation, right? I couldn't breathe at all. It was terrible. And they loved superheroes so much. We had the best time.
Was it Q&As? Was it reading?
It was like a TED Talk I was wheezing through, and a lot of Q&A, and a lot, it just cultural. And I met all the artists of Bolivia, and there was like a Bolivian Tony Stark who rummages through the garbage and makes robots, and really does. Like, you can see this on YouTube. It's quite amazing. Like, he made a Wally out of garbage. And so we got to meet all these people, and then you're meeting a lot of people who are cultural attaches and other things that are stationed over there. And so I started doing that, and then David started doing stuff too. And some of it was stuff I was offered, and I was too scared to do. And they're like, would you like to go to Russia? I'm like, deep in Russia, like a name I couldn't even come up with right now. Did you like to go deep in Russia? I go, I really would. But if they closed it tomorrow, which isn't impossible, wouldn't you all be going, why are you there? Did you know? It's like, I saw the movie Reds, they're going to close it.
Yeah.
So David doesn't have kids, so he did go. And so we both have been through some adventures that made us think we could maybe do this book, but if we do it in a genre, we can be a little more truthful.
Obviously, you talk about it. It's really exciting to both write legacy books, but also write these new things you created. And maybe all the more important now, you had a health scare last year.
Yeah, it's hard for people to listen to, is what I've discovered, because both me and Elisa had separate health scares 3 weeks apart from each other.
Oh my goodness.
It was really, really scary. I ended up with a MRSA infection, like right here, right in my forehead, and it went septic. And like they like told me I wasn't leaving. They said, "You're not getting out of here." Literally, a guy whispered. I was blinded. I was swollen and blinded. A guy whispers in my ear, "Hey, if you're a writer or someone likes to write, maybe you want to write some notes to your kids because this is it. You're done." And I was like, and that, so that, I know that's a hard
also thing. It feels like if someone's not a writer, they could also write a note or two.
But he said it like, if you're someone who likes to write, and I'm like, oh, I am, but I'm blind.
He must have known. Yeah. I think he had an idea. Yeah, he might have been blind, but I think he was paying attention.
It's a weird thing to hear like, in the middle of the night. Anyway, so, but my wife made unbelievable snap decisions in the hospital, completely saved my life, where other people do not walk out of it. Like emergency surgeries, quick movement, even getting me in as soon as she got me in. Everyone I've met over the course of the year who had what I had talks about they passed away.
Oh my goodness.
My dad had it. Like no one ever said, oh, I had it too and I'm fine. It's so I don't mean to be so morbid.
We're all so happy you're both still here.
But it was literally like 3 weeks before I was supposed to start my DC contract, and I was like literally sitting in the hospital, blinded, told that you're done. You don't get to finish your Marvel books.
Did you ever think it was foul play from Marvel?
Ah, no, I didn't. But I did. But the amazing part is that you get to find out how awesome your friends are. Like I've had amazing friends. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been on your show.
Yes.
And I wake up days later, and they're just there. And I, like, Fraction was just sitting there in the hospital. I go, how long has he been here? He's, like, asleep with a hat on. I go, how long has he been? I don't know, like, 3 days. Like, he, like, I'm...
Fraction looks like a guy who'd be sleeping in a hospital.
Did he know I was here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the takeaway is I have amazing friends, I have an amazing family, amazing wife, and this like unbelievable job that was laid out in front of me. Just to go nuts as soon as I was ready. So it ended up being great. And yeah, the air tastes sweeter. And,
oh,
you know,
that's good to
yeah,
hear.
It's all good. So, and then you get to spend all day with Superman. It was just a good place to be.
Not a bad place to be at all. This has been a delight.
Thank you.
This is Brian Michael Bendis and Mike Shoemaker.
Mike Shoemaker. Yeah.
Nerds of the highest order.
You did great.
Oh, thanks.
What's your favorite? What's
you
your favorite?
You see the faces I'm making at Seth right now.
What's your favorite comic of all time?
It is Legion.
All right, great.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it always. I don't think I've never not read an issue.
And yours. And you love Greg Rucka, right?
I love Greg Rucka.
Every day I was in the hospital, Greg Rucka showed up with a bag of Hanukkah cookies and sat there and whispered to me about Superman until I got better. He's the best guy in the world.
It is. You know, again, it's so nice to hear because again, you guys write about the best guys in the world,
also
right?
The worst guys.
Yeah, well, the worst also guys too. Yeah, that's true. But I found out why he was so good at writing Two-Face.
Yeah, exactly. So I knew you're a big fan, and it just
yes. Yeah, we were just talking about him. Is good he job. Have a show coming
He's
on? That
more than one.
Kobe Smulders is in.
Yeah, Stumptown, which is awesome.
Stumptown, yeah.
They're filming Old Guard at Amazon right now.
Oh, wow.
And Batwoman is basically, it's the year of the Rucka.
Yeah.
It's right. Amazing.
Well, I mean, it's a good time. It's obviously, it's probably about like 2007 when we met, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy, obviously, like what has happened in the world of comics.
Unbelievable.
In the last 12 years. And it's so cool to... So many of you guys that I met then have had so much to do with popular culture in the last 12 years. So
it's insane. It's crazy. All right.
Thanks. Brian Michael Bendis, everybody.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.